What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, coming to you from my real live medical office in Dedham, Massachusetts. The patients are gone. My white coat is hung up. The scrubs are in the laundry. It's nighttime. We're talking football. We got a great roster of topics tonight. Joining me as always, the CEO of Hedgebetter, Justin Fine. Justin, what's going on, dude? How you doing?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Another week in the books. I got to say, you know what? Mondays are always better when you got a good fantasy in betting weekend. You know what I mean? It was a good weekend. So feeling pretty good. You know what? A lot of big matchups. Won a lot of big matchups. Hit a couple bets. It was just one of those weekends where things went right. You know,
what was your play of the week this weekend?
My play of the week this weekend.
Your five-star ironclad lock of the week.
My ironclad lock of the week. I took Chase Brown for a touchdown.
Okay.
Yeah,
You're doing the prop bets.
Yeah, though. Yeah. My lock. I parlayed the Bengals to win and Chase Brown to have a touchdown. That was my bet.
All right, that's a solid play, solid bet. But I love that right now. One of the best things about legalized sports betting is that all the ability, and I know this is what Hedgebetter kind of ties into a little bit, and I know you guys are going to revolutionize this in a whole new way, which is another matter altogether. But how you're able to bet live now, and if you buy into a game and you don't like it, you can get out and take maybe a 20 or 30% loss, but you're out. And vice versa, if there's a game you like, or if there's a game you think you feel like is going to shift or change, you can buy into that. And that's really, I think, a great thing for a fan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, we did it this weekend when Buffalo was down, my buddies and I. That was a live bet. We all smashed it. We saw the opportunity, right. and it wound up being a good bet. But yeah, it just, I think as fans, as people who have a general knowledge about the game and have been watching football for a while, you kind of just get a feel sometimes when games are trending in certain directions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And you just get that sense and you're like, I'm out or right. I'm in I did it this week with the Rams, and I bought into that game. I didn't take it. I took the Rams in the first or second quarter of that game. And quite frankly, I was lucky to get the cover there. Very lucky because it was an overtime game, but you get a sense of how the game is flowing and you just go with it.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Patriots, Justin. For the Patriots, not quite as good this weekend. Big loss to Tennessee. We got a lot to talk about this game and some of the things happening in Foxborough. Let's start with the obvious, Justin. It's 5:09. The NFL trade deadline was 1 hour and 9 minutes ago, and the Patriots did absolutely nothing at the trade deadline. I personally was hoping that they would be buyers at this trade deadline, because I think if you can get a piece and bring them in for next year, you do that, because they have so many holes to fill.
Yeah.
They did nothing. It looks like they're rolling with what they got. So any thoughts on that?
I didn't know. If anything, I kind of expected them to be sellers, maybe give off a couple pieces. After I saw them move Josh Uche, last week, I figured who could be next. But I mean, they really didn't wind up doing much of anything, and I think again, it sends a clear message that they're at least sticking with what they have for now.
I get the idea of if you can sell and bring assets, go for it. But some of the players that were mentioned in some of these trade discussions, like for example, Devin Godchild was apparently on the trading block, and I'm like, this run defense absolutely sucks already. Yeah. Can you imagine what they would be like if they had no Devin Godchild out there? Right. It could be even worse than what it's been.
I agree totally. I mean, that in their run defense, that's really been their big Achilles heel, right? It was what really bit them in the behind again this weekend. It was tough. They were constantly finding themselves in a disadvantage, and at disadvantageous spots on defense, third and short, second and short, after giving up chunk plays through the run.
Absolutely. And we're gonna get to the whole thing with the game upcoming, let me just say that they should have lost this game in Tennessee by like, I think 10 to 14 points at least. Like a lot went right for them to even have a chance. I think it was a combination of a lot of luck and an exceptional performance from a young quarterback who is able to make plays in a way that we have not seen in a while in New England since Brady left, and really in a way that is so exciting and promising. But it was May's playmaking ability and just some luck, I think, and a few lucky bounces that really kept them in this game. Otherwise, if there was, oh yeah, and one other factor, the complete suckitude of Mason Rudolph. He sucks.
Yeah.
You know, add those three factors up, and that's what kept the Pats in the game. Otherwise, this would have been a blowout.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, again, just the real only silver lining was Drake May, right? I mean, I don't think there's really too much other than that you can hang your hat on and find too much solace in. But it was a battle between two teams who were at the bottom of the NFL. And it just stinks because, you know what, in that situation, you'd really hope that that's a game that your team can win. And they should have won. And again, it did go to overtime. It came down to the wire. But like you said, the Pats easily could have found themselves in a double-digit loss there.
See, that's funny, though, because, like, and we can kick it off from there with the kickoff, the opening take, to set the table for the podcast, because it's going to feed right into what you're saying. But before I even get to that, let me just say, I don't feel like the Patriots should have won this game. I felt like they were really kind of out of it. It felt
I'm saying going into the game. Going into the game, I felt like they should have probably won this game, especially when it was Mason Rudolph versus Drake May.
We thought they were going to win this game. But, I mean, look, in the last couple of weeks, we've now seen them get outclassed by Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, almost borderline Tennessee, really. I don't want to say outclassed, but Tennessee was clearly the better team on Sunday. So that I think, is just a very humbling statement about what this team in this roster is, 1-53 right now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Tennessee, really not too many playmakers, you know, and I know they got a Calvin Ridley, they got Tony Pollard, but that's a pretty bare bone roster too. So, you know what? They exposed the Patriots in some areas with some guys who really shouldn't have been able to do that.
I mean, you hit it. They're a bare bones roster, but they are also a far superior roster to the Patriots, with the one exception of quarterback.
Yeah.
And that really is, like, you're like, whoa, like, this is a 1-7 team, and they have talent, I think, certainly on offense, that was way better than the past. All right, let's kick it off, Justin. Let's start with the opening take. Let's get in, let's do the deep dive and get into all this. I want to begin just with saying this. You know, it is amazing how far the bar has moved for this franchise, even over the last year. I mean, forget Super Bowls and, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, Dynasty and the Patriot way. We're so far past that. Right now, we're in a place where people are really comfortable and accepting of losing around here. And again, a lot of people happy they lost, because they're now in the position to get the first pick in the draft again. And I was not happy that they lost this game on Sunday, because to me, I think this team needs to start winning games for me like this, for me to believe that they're on the right path.
Right.
The quarterback looks great. You can't take anything away, I think, from what he did. It was not a perfect performance, but when you put it in the context of who's around him and what he has, I thought it was exceptional. So you don't have that as an excuse anymore for the Patriots. For some reason, Justin, this team is developing a losing culture. They are that I think is going to be a big problem for them as they try to rebuild. I just watched Mac Jones, Justin, for 3 years. And how many times did we sit in this and record this podcast and say they were one play away, they were one score away? And then after 3 years, we said what? Mac Jones, he's not a winner. So I don't want to be sitting here in a couple of years saying the same thing about Drake May. They need to start winning these games. They need to eradicate this losing culture that they have developed. And the only way you can do that is from winning. You can't come away empty-handed against a bad team like the Titans, where you were in position to win the game and somehow still lose. I think it is, the losing culture thing is real, and it's becoming a problem for them. Your thoughts, Justin?
You know, I agree that the losing culture is becoming real, but I got to ask, doesn't it feel like they're losing games differently? And I know we have a short sample size with Drake May, but like the Mac Jones era, the way we were losing games, it felt like we were just always coming up a step short, making plays that we should be making, right? And it's like, I've been watching Drake May play in this offense play, and it's like, when we were losing with Mac Jones, I think more often than not, we said that Mac Jones was the problem, and that like Mac Jones didn't show that he could elevate his team, and he didn't show that he could make his team better, and he didn't make big plays when he needed. And that's not the same issue that we're seeing with this team when they lose, right? Like, we're seeing Drake May play well. We're seeing Drake May elevate his team. We're seeing him make big plays when needed, a la the forcing it into overtime. Like, so yes, they're developing this losing culture and they're continuing to lose, but I feel like they're losing in a totally different way. And actually, I would nobody wants to lose, but I think I would rather lose in this manner, knowing that we have the right guy to build around, than the way we were, presenting ourselves before with Mac Jones. That's just me, though.
No, I know what you're saying. It definitely feels different, but it goes beyond the quarterback. I mean, with the Mac Jones era, they were a better team. Mac, I don't think, was the kind of player that could elevate the team around him. And the net result was kind of the same. Now the team is worse. They've plopped in this young quarterback. He is clearly a better quarterback with a higher ceiling, clearly elevating his team. But the end result is still losing. And at what point? I mean, the Patriots are on track to their second consecutive 3-4-5 win season, if they're lucky. At what point does all that losing just become contagious and infectious? At what point does all that losing completely undermine this new regime, completely undermine Mayo? Players start losing confidence in the coaches. The quarterback starts losing confidence on the field. You know, this is how it happens. That's why you have to win these games.
I don't disagree with that. I do think, though, you know, when you talk about quarterback and how important it is to find quarterback, like, the quarterback's your leader, right? He's your leader on the field. He's your leader in the locker room. He's the guy that, you know, can really hopefully be the linchpin that you build around. Having that, I feel like it's a different mentality. I feel like players, teammates, like, they approach it, they'll look at it a little bit differently, right? It's, you don't feel so stuck in the mud. You feel like you got the guy that can help take you to the next level, but the supporting cast is who needs to elevate themselves and really help them kind of, start to win and create that winning culture. But I agree in the sense that the losing culture is creeping in 100%, but I don't know. It just feels a little bit different to me. I feel almost weirdly optimistic when I see Drake May play despite losing.
I completely agree with that. It feels very different. There is no arguments here. I don't want to see them get into the habit and pattern, in May in particular, get into the habit and pattern of losing games like this, because I feel like it just becomes like a cycle of losing. And I think the more you lose, the harder it is to break. So me personally, and I know you'd agree with this, right from the beginning, I want them to start winning these games. Now, it's only been four games that May has started. Really three. You really shouldn't count the Jets game. And I mean, this is a long way to go even in this season. There's still eight games left. This could really change over the second half of the season. And I think that as a Patriots fan, that's one of the things I want to see in the second half of this season is like, them start winning games like this so they can develop those winning habits and develop that winning culture going into 2025. You don't want to be a loser in a losing culture, in a losing locker room, and try to reverse all that in one season. I think it's a lot.
I think you're right. I think they're dealing with the unfortunate fact that just they're not that good of a team at this point. Between their injuries and their departures, they're not that good of a team. And they're going to have trouble winning these games, despite how good Drake May looks and how confident we are in him. So I think it's an uphill battle for them. But I do think they're going to be able to compete in some of these games. And I wouldn't be surprised if they steal one or two, but I think it's going to be tough. I think it's tough when you don't have the horses to come through and win consistently like that.
Well, you just hit on something important. So let's pivot and change topics a little bit, which is, you know, the team isn't that good. And I think that is abundantly clear to all of us that short of the quarterback and one or two other players, they're not that good team. So when you look at why this team is so bad, I mean, I think you have to look at it in two ways. Is the problem the coaching? Is the problem the talent? And the reality is the problem is both. But what I would say about that is this. I think everybody knows that Elliott Wolf didn't do a very good job this year in his first year as GM. He could have done much better. He blew free agency, right? He really didn't bring in anything of relevance in free agency.
Right.
Unless you count Antonio Gibson, which I think running backs like that are a dime a dozen. The draft short of Drake May looks like it was a total disaster. The Jalen Polk pick to me is a huge swing and a miss. That was basically a first round pick who literally has done nothing in 9 games. They could have done so much with that Polk pick. They had so many holes to fill and they swung and they missed. All that said, Justin, let's face it. The roster on this team was terrible at the end of last year. And Elliott Wolf was handed a bag of absolute dog poo from Bill Belichick. Mm. But in spite of that, and the fact that they aren't that good, can they not be at least a well-coached team? And right now, let's talk about some of the things we saw on Sunday in the game. Do they look again like a well-coached team to you? Because to me, they don't.
Not in particular, no. They didn't look like a very well-coached team. No, I would agree.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he has terrific qualities about him, but I just think Mayo doesn't know enough about football to be a head coach in the NFL.
Again, you know what? And look, I'm not defending Mayo, but I've used this argument before, and I got to stay consistent. I got to stick with it. I find it very tough to fairly and accurately judge coaches when they don't have adequate talent to get the job done. Because you're never going to get clear results. Who is at fault? Yep. Is it the coach or is it the talent?
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, you know, what coach in the league could win with this roster? You could go back. You can just go back and back in circles, right? Because the coaching sucks. The GM. So it really is both of them. But I think when you look at some of the things that are happening in these games, Justin, some of them are inexcusable, and they really don't necessarily pertain to the talent on the roster. And I'm going to give you a good example from Sunday.
Yeah.
How about kicking a 56-yard field goal into the wind in Jacksonville? I mean, in Tennessee. Joey Sly is not – who's Matt Stover? Who's the guy from Baltimore?
Tucker. Tucker, yeah, Justin Tucker, yeah. No, Sly is not a big leg kicker. No.
So you kick a 56-yard kick into the wind?
Yeah.
I mean, how does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I get it. Little decisions, and I know you hinted at this earlier, but you know, to hit on it now, I think what did you have to lose with this team at this stage of the game to not go for two at the end, right? Like you have you got a young team. You got your what the season's pretty much over in terms of playing meaningful football later on in the year. You got a chance to you know, get some real valuable experience running a 2-point conversion at the end of the game to win it. And you just play it safe, knowing that your defense can't stop their ground game.
Absolutely. And I looked up the ESPN analytics this week, and the win probability, if you go to overtime, is 48%. And if you go for two, is 45%. So strictly by the numbers, Mayo did the right thing. But that said, it was a terrible decision. It was an absolutely terrible decision. Right. I said it as it happened, and I'll say it now, because they couldn't stop the run. They had really no business being in the game, and they were not the better team, and they were on the road. You have to be able to read the situation and make the right decision at that moment. It's the same thing as the going for two in Jacksonville, Justin, a few weeks ago, where he went for two, and he shouldn't have. So it just feels like this guy, when it comes to the game management stuff, And you can talk about the lack of talent, and I get it, and it makes everything look worse. Totally fair. The game management stuff, the in-game stuff, the stuff at the end of halves, two-minute clock management stuff, the discipline, the penalties. Mm-hmm. It just feels like he just doesn't quite do it all that well right now.
I would totally agree with that. They still keep getting killed by these I almost use the term uncharacteristic penalties, but at this point they're characteristic for this team. Yeah. Totally. So they still got the penalty issue, still undisciplined in like you said, they still have a couple of questionable decisions. So talent can't really speak to that. I agree. That is not the lack of talent's fault. So there's definitely ways that he could improve or have been better to this point so far.
Just lots of mistakes.
Lots of mistakes
from Gerard Mayo that you can't blame Elliott Wolf for.
I agree.
As bad as the roster building was. Okay, let's talk a little bit just on that kind of note, Justin. When I think of Drake May coming in as a rookie this year, and you were really young when this happened, but I think of Drew Bledsoe's rookie year.
Yeah.
And this sort of comp between like 93 and this year, bringing in a rookie quarterback, building from scratch. The Patriots in 93 were coming off, I believe, a 2-14 and a 1-15 season, and a 6-10 3 years before that. Okay. So right. Similar. But I look back on that 93 team and I'm like, they had building blocks on that team. I look at this roster and I'm like, where are the building blocks? So we talked about Mayo. Let's put the spotlight on Elliott Wolf, who built this team. Where are the young building blocks, Justin, on this roster that are going to be part of the process moving forward besides Drake May?
Okay, so I know we've been bashing the defense a little bit, and I know it's a little tough now, but I think at all three levels of that defense, you have a couple guys that you can build around, right? You can build around, when he's healthy, Christian Barmore, right? I think Keon White has proven that he can be a valuable contributor moving forward. I like Jawan Bentley when he comes back healthy, right?
He's getting up there though.
Jawan Bentley's got to be 28.
Let me look it up. Keep talking.
Okay. And then you got Gonzalez in the secondary. I mean, I'm not saying they're deep or they're super talented by any means, but I think you got a couple guys you can build around. And I know Jalen Polk hasn't been great, but I still, as Drake May develops, as this offense develops, I want to see how some of their young receivers develop. I mean, Kayshon Booty, the last few weeks, stepping up, looking like he may be one of their emerging guys. But I know what you mean though. There's not a ton of young talent, but I think there's a little bit more maybe than we think, and it's tough because some of it isn't really in the field right now. But they do. They need a lot of it.
Let me give you a list of names that I would come up with who I think are building blocks.
Okay.
Most of them are on defense.
Yeah.
Kyle Duggar.
Yeah.
Christian Gonzalez. Marcus Jones.
Yeah.
I like Marcus Jones quite a bit. Okay. Yeah. I'd love to put Jonathan Jones in, but he's getting older.
Right.
Jelani Tavai, I think, is a good linebacker. Bentley, coming off an injury, he's going to be 29 next year. I don't know if I can put him on the list. Keon White and Christian Barmore.
Yeah.
Who looks like he's going to come back, which is huge. On offense, it's Drake May. Maybe Michael Onwenu. I don't know if you can put David Andrews on that list, coming off a year-ending injury at this point in his career.
Right.
And then maybe Hunter Henry, who's also getting up there in football years. That's it. I mean, I'm tempted to put Pop Douglas on there, but I'm sorry. I just haven't seen enough from him. He's not consistent. You know, it's been sporadic.
Well, you know what my problem is right now with this receiving group is there's been a lot of rotation and there's been a lot of change. I mean, you know, Kendrick Bourne just joined the mix, but there's been a ton of rotation. I feel like, you know, they're playing a bunch of guys. I really want to see them utilize somebody like Pop Douglas like he should be, which is a go-to guy playing the majority of snaps, commanding a fairly high target share. Like, I think hopefully some of that stuff will fall into play over the back half of the season as they see who their best contributors have been. I mean, that's my hope. But I don't know. I want to see them some of their guys utilized a little bit differently.
Do you think Pop Douglas is that kind of player, Justin?
When I see him make some plays, I see the ball in his hand. He has athletic abilities that a lot of receivers and a lot of players in general don't have. So I need to see what that can translate in and grow into. That's my thinking.
If I was going to say right now, I'd call Douglas like a 3/borderline number two receiver.
Yeah.
But I will say this in his defense, which is it is really hard to get a read, just kind of like what you were saying earlier, right? It's really hard to get a read on Pop Douglas when they have nothing else in that receiver room.
Exactly.
Nobody's afraid of Kayshon Booty. No one's afraid of Tyquan Thornton, Jalen Polk, you know, Kendrick Bourne. So, you know, what would Pop Douglas be like if DK Metcalf or Jamar Chase was on the outside?
Right.
Then you'd probably be able to really utilize his skill set. But it's hard to get a sense because the team is so bad.
I totally agree. You need that big bodied go-to guy that can command targets and attention from the defense. And they just don't have that. They have a bunch of wide receiver threes all competing and trying to establish themselves.
Yeah, they do. And I think it's a huge problem because, like, honestly, I look back again and I'm always just going to compare this, that 92-93 team, I think would smoke this team right now. Yeah. And I just say that because that just shows you how bad this roster really is. I really believe that 93 team would smoke this team if they played.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, you know what? You had Drew Bledsoe versus Drake May. I hope it goes a little better for Drake May here than it did for Drew.
I mean, forgetting quarterback, because you could say May and Bledsoe was a wash, but like they had Ben Coates, Bruce Armstrong, you know, a couple other wide receivers that I'd say were better than anything the Pats have now. I mean,
yeah,
it just shows you how bad this roster is. All right, let's talk a little bit, Justin. Let's pivot and talk a little bit about the quarterback. We have to talk about Drake May's performance on Sunday.
Yeah.
And look, I will say this. I don't love the turnovers. He's a rookie. He's going to make mistakes. He's clearly making some mistakes. The hope is that gets phased out of his game. But you have to remember, this kid is out there with nothing. The line sucks. The receivers suck. I don't think the scheme or the coaching is all that good. They have no running game. Drake May was responsible for 301 of the Patriots' 315 total yards on Sunday. He was their offense on Sunday. You're asking this kid to come in his fourth game and carry this team, and he's showing so far that he is up to the task. Does he have to clean it up? Absolutely. But I thought in the context of what it was an exceptional performance. It was an impressive performance. And I'll say this, I'm not 100% sold yet, believe it or not, that Drake May is the quarterback of the future. There's just so much time. It's only been 3 or 4 games, so much to see. But I will say this, and you might disagree with this, his ceiling is even higher than I thought it was when they drafted him. This guy has the chance, a legitimate chance, to not just be a good quarterback, but I think to be in that Mahomes, Allen, Lamar Jackson kind of level of elite.
I would agree. I mean, the kid is talented. He is athletic. He's big. He's got the size. He's got the skills. He's got the arms. And he seems to have the intangibles, right? I mean, the big thing, and look, we mentioned this earlier, but like how many times did we say in this podcast during the Mac Jones era, we need to see Mac Jones elevate his team and make his team look better than maybe they are and be responsible for a couple of close games, be responsible for a couple of wins, make some big plays that we can say, okay, Mac Jones, like not anybody could have done that. Drake May is doing that and it's a small sample size so far, but he's doing it kind of overwhelmingly, right? Like he's using his athleticism to become very dynamic, right? He's not only showing his mobility and his ability to pick up yards on the ground, but he's making throws off balance on the run, on the move. He's making big plays. He's leading big drives. I mean, the guy really is outperforming above and beyond, and he's clearly elevating this Patriots offense to the point where, like, I think he's making some of these guys like I just said, Kayshon Booty earlier was like emerging. Like, I don't think Kayshon Booty is a good receiver. I think like Drake May is right. Making Kayshon Booty good.
That's right. You know I agree mean? With that. And Justin, and this cannot be understated or glanced over. May is doing everything you just said
right
under the worst possible circumstances.
Yeah.
What do they have on this team that they're good at? On offense, what do they have that this kid can rely on besides himself? And the answer is like nothing. So he's doing all that. He don't got Terry McLaurin and Cliff Kingsbury and, you know, all these other great players. Like Caleb Williams has, you know, all this great weapons around him. He doesn't have any of that. And he's still doing it.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. No, I totally agree. He's going above and beyond with what he has. And I think that's why it's exciting right now.
It is. And the other thing, and you hit on this, is like the physical stuff is one thing. It's the intangibles that he continues to show, the toughness, the poise, the resiliency, the leadership. Justin, we never saw those things really. Well, Mac Jones was tough, I guess. But we never really saw that stuff consistently from Mac Jones.
Yeah.
This kid's already showing it in four games.
I think he's shown more in four games than in terms of ability to change games carry and make plays, team. Carry the team than Mac Jones did in three seasons. And that says a lot. That.
And I was a Mac apologist, but I agree with that 100%. He has a ceiling that is even higher than they predicted, I think.
Yeah, and he's doing it with arguably even a worse roster than May had during those 3 years.
It's not arguable. Yeah. It is a far worse roster. Even that the 2-point conversion play, Justin, you know, the footwork on that play, all we heard was, he needs to work on his footwork. He needs to work on his footwork. This kid is a natural athlete who just moves fluidly in the pocket.
Right.
You saw it from the first time he came in the preseason, right?
Yeah.
And you could just see he understood how to move in the pocket. Now, 10 weeks later, you look at a play like that play against the Titans. This kid just, he knows how to move and his footwork is actually quite good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think he's ahead of where we were expecting him to be based off of what we were hearing.
Absolutely. And I think, I don't know what you thought about the, what did you think about the interception in overtime? That was probably the worst throw we had all day.
Yeah. At that point, you were just led such a nice methodical drive down the field to tie the game. Why go for that risky, Hail Mary type of play? But I mean, you know what? Look, he took a chance. It obviously didn't work out. But again, I think that's part of just like being a rookie in like his growth.
Absolutely.
Like that's a decision.
Yeah, I agree. And to me, Justin, what I would say is this is why you have to play Drake May.
Right.
Because these are the things he needs to learn this year. You can't do what he did. He played a great game. He just got a first down with his legs. You get the ball at the 40-yard line. You have two timeouts. Yeah. You have 2 minutes left on the clock. There's no urgency. So you don't need to force a ball up. These are the lessons that Drake May needs to learn. And he's only going to learn from being on the field. So I think it just validates 1,000% why it's so important to play him.
Exactly. Let him make these mistakes now. And if he's as good as we think he is, he hopefully will lessen those mistakes or not make them moving forward. Like that's the whole point of what you're saying in terms of playing him and in seeing his growth. So, I mean, yeah, that was think a case of like a young quarterback, just not having the patience to realize, hey, I can do exactly what I did the last possession and lead a nice methodical drive, take time off the clock. Like I don't have to go for this all. I don't have to win the game in one throw. You know what I mean? And that's just, again, growing pains for being a rookie and just learning how to settle into the game, I think, and not get too excited in overtime or in a situation like that.
And a little bit of a tough break too, because Kendrick Bourne was running the corner route, falls down.
Yeah.
If he runs his corner route, the safety should go with him. And that route to Booty might've actually been open, but it's a chance you can't take
right
in that spot. Yeah. And that was a rookie mistake by Drake May, but this is what's going to happen. I mean, this is not going to be his last bad right. rookie mistake at all. But your hope is by the end of this year, you're seeing his game clean up a little so that he's learning and getting a sense of how to avoid that stuff. So it doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think we are starting to see a little bit of that too, in terms of his development, like even just in the short time. And I know he came out kind of with a bang and I think impressed us, you know, even from his first start, but I think we even are starting to see that incremental growth and development in his game. And it's going to continue because it's obviously still raw, but yeah, he's making the progress that we want him to make, I think.
Absolutely. What did you make, Justin, of all the running? He was the first Patriots quarterback to run for more than 90 yards since 1976.
Yeah, I saw that. I think it was 94 yards, 96 yards, something like that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, he didn't seem very affected by the whole concussion thing. I think that was clearly, I don't think Drake May thought he had a concussion. Okay. And I don't think if it was up to Drake May, he ever would have left the Jets game. So I think that's a really interesting question about, you know, when the league comes in and yanks a player off the field without really, I don't know, the evidence to back it up. That's a whole nother matter, but clearly, you know, he was not affected by what had happened the week before. I don't love him having to run the ball so much, Justin.
Yeah.
But I feel like the receivers don't get open. So he kind of has no choice.
Well, look, if you're a quarterback and you have a skill set, right? You're running the ball is clearly a skill for him. He's athletic. He's physical, right? It almost becomes like a philosophical question at that point. Do you not do it because you got hurt or because there's a chance that you got hurt, right? Like, do you stop or do you change your play style? Like, one of the things you love about Drake May is his physicality, is his athleticism, is his ability to be mobile. So, you know what? Like, I think you just got to keep doing it. I know the emphasis and value placed on keeping these quarterbacks healthy, especially around head injuries or just keeping them healthy in general. But I think if you have a skill set and you have that talent, you use it. You don't shy away from it because you're afraid of injury.
Yeah, unless we forget, May stayed on the field for like four plays before they yanked him off. So he didn't even want to come off for the Jets game. But, you know, like, I cringe every time I see him get hit. I would much rather him dropping back, throwing the ball, than doing some of the amazing things he's done with his legs. Yeah. but I just think, look, you're seeing a young guy that's out there without a lot of help trying to make plays. And I mean, the guy is fearless. And I think that's a great sign for what he will be one day.
Yep. 100%.
Okay. I want to give you one more take about the defense, Justin, before we wrap this up and move to the Around the League podcast next. And that is, look, I've been ripping Mayo the whole year, not because I don't love the guy, but because I just don't think he's ready yet. For the lack of discipline, the penalties, the play calling, decision making, clock management, you can add it to the list, okay? But the game management. But I'm going to give him some credit for once. And I think you'll agree with this, because on Sunday, it certainly validated the fact that this team and this defense is playing really hard still on defense. And that for all the limitations of this roster, and they are clearly there, the reason they cannot stop the run is because they are not that good, okay, in their front seven. They continue to play really hard. And that was one of the reasons why they stuck around in this game, even when they shouldn't have. I think for a 2-7 team, they're playing exceptionally hard. And you have to give Mayo credit for that piece of this, at least. This defense has not given up. They've been decimated by injuries. They're still out there battling and trying to compete. And that is a great thing to see.
I totally agree. We talked about this a few weeks ago when he challenged them for being soft. And I said, you know, look, maybe this team has more in the tank. Maybe they're not giving it 100%, but they're certainly not quitting, right? This isn't a team that has quit or that has gone soft. So, they haven't given up, and you do gotta put that at least put a decent amount of that back to the head coach and to the coaching staff. So at least kudos to keeping his guys involved in the game and excited, enthusiastic about the season moving forward. And hopefully you can keep that up, because again, we talk about how important this is for development, not only in terms of Drake May, but a bunch of these other guys that were wondering if they can become building blocks. If you start to lose a quarter, a third, half the team starts to quit, you know, what does that do for the development of these guys? Right. So that's very important.
Absolutely. I wonder, Justin, what this team is going to look like when Christian Barmore comes back.
Right.
Because, you know, clearly the run defense has been the huge issue for them. Barmore is the kind of player, he changes the whole defense when he's out there. Like, he might be their best player right now on this whole roster. I don't think that's, you know, hyperbolic to say that. So, you know, you put Barmore in there and it can solidify this run defense a little bit. The way they are playing hard, you might get a little bit better than what we've had the last few weeks.
I could see that. I didn't actually see this. When is the target date? When are they looking to have him back by?
He's going to start practicing this week.
Nice. Okay. All right.
Which is a good sign medically, because it means his blood clot was from a reversible cause. So, you know, they usually keep people on blood thinner for 3 months after that. And his 3 months is up. Once he's off the blood thinner, he can get back to playing within a couple of weeks. And I mean, he could potentially be back on the field in a few weeks from now.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That'd be great to get him back on the field. If anything, just to get him some game experience under his belt heading into next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And Justin, I just want to see it look better
right
at this point. Like, I really, and Christian Barmore is going to make it look better. And if I'm Christian Barmore, I don't want to miss a whole year of my career. I think that's a bad thing for any football player to experience. There have been many guys whose careers have been ruined because they could just never quite get back
right
after missing a year. Barmore's still a young guy in his prime. That helps. But if there's any way he can get out there, I would think he would want to get out there.
I would agree. Yeah. And I hope he does. And I hope to see him out there because, yeah, that's just going to help us, you know, compete and maybe steal a couple of these games like we were talking about.
All right, let's move, Justin, before we discuss the Chicago Bears game, looking ahead to that game and what's upcoming for this team. Let's take a minute to enjoy the always exciting, interesting non-football topic of the week. Are you ready, my friend?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, today's non-football topic of the week is apropos of this time of year, which is, are we still doing this daylight savings shit? And I hate to say that word, but I don't know what else to say at this point. Like, what the hell are we doing with this turning the clocks back? I don't know anybody that wants their hour of daylight in the morning versus even, we're not farmers anymore. Right. My kid's school bus comes at 8:10 in the morning. So what are we doing turning the clocks back? Kids don't even go to school that early anymore. It is crazy. Justin, your thoughts on daylight savings, and please tell me that you're in favor of repelling this stupid archaic law.
You know, I am. And I got to say, if anything alone, it's for, I always forget to change the clock on my dashboard, in my car. Oh my goodness. It's just the little annoying things like that. It's like, I woke up one day.
You and Bill Belichick.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Look, I got to say, I've never seen the point of it. I've never really understood it. I've never known when it's coming or why it's happening. I get it. It's an old, you know, thing for the farmers and whatnot, but it's just so irrelevant nowadays. I don't understand the point of it at all.
Yeah. I'm trying to like think about it. And most of the really screwed up things in this country happen and exist and perpetuate because there is like a really powerful lobby or group of people
right
that refuses to let go and let things change. I'm trying to think of like who has a right vested interest in keeping this dumbass rule going.
You know what? That's a great question. Yeah. The big daylight savings people. I don't know who they are, but,
like the farmers, they're not a lobby. They don't lobby. The farmers don't lobby anyone. Who else?
No, you know what? I'll tell you. There's only one good day of daylight savings, and it's the first day when you gain an hour of sleep. That's it.
Yeah.
And then I could.
It's not even a good day though, Justin. No, it's just a good morning.
Yeah, it's just a good morning. You get 1 hour of sleep, extra hour of sleep, and that's it. And then it's even and because then it's even worse. That I don't know. I that 1 hour, that one day that you get on the reverse end of it, when they're like, "Oh, you're losing an hour of sleep," and it always just seems to be in the worst night possible to lose an hour of sleep, right? That might be even worse than gaining the hour.
The morning, I agree, is so sweet. You get that extra hour of sleep. You're up so early, like, oh, this is amazing. And then it's like a giant kick in the abdomen when you. It's like 3:30 and it's starting to get dark that day. Yeah. So that quickly changes, right?
Yeah.
Once you get to that afternoon, you're like, oh crap, it's going to actually get dark at 4 today.
Yes. Yeah. I can't stand it, honestly. I mean, I know what just happened. We just gained the hour in the morning and now we're getting darker earlier. And I don't know. I've never understood it. Never really seen a need for it. And I don't know how we even get rid of it. How do you get that in the ballot?
I there's been talk of it, but that should go on the ballot. Like everything else is going on the ballot. That should be on the ballot too.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
That will pass. If they ever had a public vote, popular vote to get rid of this stupid turn the clocks back, that would pass in a second. It would be like 80-20.
Is it just a Massachusetts thing?
No, it's everywhere except for Arizona. It's the only state that doesn't do it.
Huh.
Okay. You have to give Arizona credit for that.
You know, they did a lot of things wrong. Yeah.
They got that right.
Wow. All right. Good for them.
Yeah. Good for them. Right. Seriously. Good for them. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Do they do it in other countries?
Not sure.
I don't know. If it's just like an ass backwards American thing. You know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Seriously. I feel like we have other issues to tackle than the whole daylight.
The difference between it getting dark at 5:30 at night and like 4:30 is just so
it's devastating.
Massive. I'm sorry. Devastating. You know, exactly. It's just so devastating. Like when you get out of work at 4 or 5 and it's pretty much the day is over, that is just so demoralizing. Right, give me that hour at night 100% of the time.
Yeah. I mean, look.
All right.
No. Yeah. Go for it. I was just going to say, look, I'm looking out the window behind you and it's pitch black. And you know, when we start recording this podcast at the beginning of the season, it's bright and sunny out right now behind you. You know what I mean? So, if you watch the show on YouTube, you could track the shift of the daylight.
The turning of the season. Yeah. You can track it. Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible. It is just absolutely terrible. And you feel so different. Like 5 o'clock in the summer feels like it's like noon.
Exactly.
And 5 o'clock now feels like it's like bedtime.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right, man. Well, listen, we're going to wrap this up. And any more thoughts about daylight savings time or anything like that?
I got to say, don't have much more to contribute to daylight savings.
Yeah. It's just universally hated. Yeah. That's all.
Yeah.
Everyone hates it. All right, let's move on, Justin. Let's take a quick look at the Pats Bears this weekend. Any thoughts about this game coming up? The Bears are not looking so great, but I think they're obviously a much better team than the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're looking at this as a get right game, but I want to see Drake versus Caleb. I want to see I want to see if this brings something out of each other, right? You know, the Jaden Daniels and the Caleb Williams matchup. Well, it ended very excitingly. It was kind of boring to watch, right? I wonder if these two rookies are able to go out there and kind of set the field on fire. I think that'd be good for the game if Drake May and Caleb Williams go out there and put on a show.
Would you trade Drake May for Caleb Williams right now, straight up?
No.
Me neither. Absolutely not.
No,
right?
I wouldn't.
NFL redraft tomorrow. Does Drake May go ahead of Caleb Williams?
I think it would probably go Jaden, Drake, and then Caleb.
I agree. 100%.
Yeah.
100% agree with that. Yeah, 100% agree. I think May has already looked so much better than Williams. I mean, Williams has had his moments, like certainly the London game against Jacksonville. He looked good against a terrible Jacksonville pass defense, but it's kind of been a struggle for him.
Yeah, and he's got the best weapons, not only out of any rookie this year, but out of any rookie in recent memory. It's not too often that a rookie gets to step into a squad that's as talented as this Chicago Bears team.
And not to mention a great defense too.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You know, so the fact that they're 4-4 and they're still in it with a rookie quarterback who I think has been shaky at times, to me, that's a credit to the Bears.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And Eberflus has to be on his way out, right? I mean, that guy, I know they're not going to fire him midseason. I know the McClaskies or whatever, whoever they are. I know they usually don't like to do that. But
is there a chance if they lose to the Patriots, though? Is there a chance you get fired next week?
I think if you lose to the Patriots, you'd have to seriously consider it, right? But
if you lose to the Patriots, someone's getting shit canned. That's where we are right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's tough, man. That's tough. Yeah. I mean, I think it's certainly possible because his name has come up already on the hot seat. And you're starting to see coaches get fired, which we're going to talk about in the Around the League podcast when we do it. So I don't think it's totally inconceivable that Eberflus gets fired if they lose this game.
No, I don't either. And I think he's on borrowed time anyway, I think, to be honest.
But you know, it's like let's just take a step back here on that, right? They're 4-4 and in playoff contention with a rookie quarterback. When did that become bad? You know what I mean? Like the expectations are the problem. I don't think the team is the problem. Like they're for a team with a rookie quarterback, I think they're overall performing okay. I don't know if it was fair or realistic to expect them to be any better than what they are.
I don't disagree with that. I think he's working. What he has working against him is the fact that the last 2 years with the Bears were wildly unsuccessful under his tenure. I think that's what he's got working against him. I agree. The Bears aren't in an awful spot right now. They definitely could look better. They don't look awful. But you know, I mean, look, there's big expectations and he hasn't done much since he's been there. So I think his lease is a little short.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, if they can him, I mean, talk about, I don't know. It's not good for your rookie quarterback. We've talked a lot about that for Drake May. I mean, yeah. Holds Williams too. You know, you started a whole new regime. Yeah. It might not be the best thing for Caleb Williams either. Any other thoughts about this game, Justin? What do you think? Bears by 10.
I'm gonna say, I'll say Bears, and I'll put them in like the 7-13 range. Bears in somewhere in there. Yeah,
I'm calling it. Pats win.
Yeah.
Pats win. Yeah, Patriots win this week. I think May will go in. I think they outplay. He'll outplay Caleb Williams. I think the defense will continue to play hard. I just have a feeling this will be a Patriots win this week.
You know, I hope so. I really do hope so. That would be great to see. I'd love to see a little Caleb Williams meltdown on the sideline after losing
absolutely,
the Patriots. You know?
Absolutely. All right, man. Any other thoughts about the goings on in Foxborough, Bears game coming up? Anything else going on this week?
No, I think that about does it for me.
All right, brother. All right. Well, listen, that's all the time we're going to take for the Dr. Football Podcast, Ultimate Patriots Podcast. Want to thank everybody that listened to this. And I hope you enjoyed it. Enjoy the week. Enjoy the game. Look for the Around the League podcast to drop in a couple days. And we will catch you next week. Be good, everyone.